Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Heidi Moore of The Guardian, in for Brian Lehrer. It's been a while since we talked about the financial reform efforts in Washington, and that's because there hasn't been much to talk about. The banks are still big, and we hear that there are still worries about the stability of the financial system. But any effort to change that stalled completely during the election. But could we get it moving again? The nation's top financial regulator is getting a new chairwoman. Elise Walter is taking over at the Securities and Exchange Commission. She's replacing Mary Shapiro, who took over the SEC during the financial crisis and is now stepping down. Elise Walter already sits on the commission, so she doesn't have to be confirmed by the Senate, which is convenient because, as you know, President Obama probably doesn't need another political battle right now. So what does this new chairwoman mean for the SEC? Is she going to push for reform? Neil Barofsky is here to talk about it. He's the author of the book Bailout, and he did his time in Washington as the top regulator for the TARP Bailout Fund. He's been a big advocate for financial reform. Neil, welcome.
Thanks, Heidi. It's good talking to you again.
Likewise. So we're getting a new chairwoman of the SEC. Can we expect that this is going to change the path of financial reform, meaning that maybe we'll actually get some?
No, I think actually in the short term, it probably means more of the opposite. Because of the structure of the SEC as a commission and what it means now with Chairman Shapiro stepping down is there'll be two Democrats and two Republicans on the commission until someone is nominated and confirmed to fill that fifth spot by President Obama. And that really sets the stage for more gridlock on the commission level and a lot of those unfinished and unwritten rules that were contemplated by the Big Regulatory Reform Act, Dodd-Frank, back in 2010, aren't going to get done. And you have an SEC that's really blown a lot of deadlines. A lot of it has, as you mentioned in the introduction, moved at a glacial pace, and it's not likely that on a 2-2 split we're going to see anything come out of the SEC in the near future.
What's the most important thing that still needs to be done right now?
Well, the two biggest components of Dodd-Frank and the two things that were supposed to really change the danger of the financial system, that's how it was advertised, was getting the rules set for derivatives reform and the so-called Volcker Rule, which was supposed to limit the types of risks that the largest financial institutions can take. And unfortunately, one of those two sets of rules have been finalized. Both are incredibly important for the markets, incredibly important indicator of how effective Dodd-Frank will be in achieving a lot of its goals. And unfortunately, they've been so mired down by incessant lobbying. Deadlines have been blown. And we're really not going to get a real sense of how successful Dodd-Frank will be until we see the final versions of those rules. And this is not good timing by Chairman Shapiro as far as being able to get the SEC over the hump to finally issue these final rules and regulations.
So what do you think of the timing here? Did Chairman Shapiro just give up?
Well, it certainly sounds like that in some of the news accounts. The describes her as just being exhausted by what was a nearly 4-year battle that she waged as chairman. And you can certainly have some sympathy for that. She was in a very difficult position coming in. It's important to remember that when she took the job, it was a really legitimate shot that the SEC was going to be eliminated by Congress. And there was even some support for that within the Obama administration. So she really was fighting for that agency from day one, and you could sort of see how she's just perhaps has been worn down. I think particularly after her signature effort, one of the things that she saw as one of the biggest problems of the financial crisis, the money market funds, and the structure that they had, which is broken and helped contribute to huge runs that really affected the systemic stability, and she sort of made that part of her signature effort to try to get that type of reform, but she was never able to get it out of the SEC commission, and perhaps having been wounded by that final failure, she just decided that enough was enough, and it was time to move on.
All right, that's a big battle. Can you, for people who aren't familiar with the money market fund fight, can you break that down in plain English? What's going on there?
You know, essentially what we have in our countries, we have this regulated financial system and banking system, and then we have a part of it that's a lot less regulated, and it's nicknamed is called the shadow banking system, and it's not really in the shadows. We all know where it is, but it's basically institutions that do a lot of the same types of things that banks do, which means that they get money on the short term from deposit-like folks, you know, institutions or individuals, and then lend it out to those who need it and help sort of getting the capital where it needs to be. And one of the big source, multi-trillion dollar sources that perform this function are money market funds, which accept deposits from individuals and institutions and then lend them out. The problem is they're not really deposits, they're investments. But there's this presumption out there that they're almost the equivalent of deposits, like if you and I were going to go a bank account, open an account and put our money in, and that it would be insured and that we would get it back. But the structure of the money market funds is not that. They're investments, and the money market fund takes the investor's money and invests it in all sorts of different types of assets when it goes out and lends them. And that means that if those investments go bad, which happened during the financial crisis, the investors / depositors can lose money. And that creates the potential for big runs on these accounts, in part because of certain special rules that they have, which gives them the right not to necessarily value what their investments are as being accurately, but essentially offering a return at principal, the so-called $1 net asset value. And that gives incentives during bad financial times for people to try to get their money out as quickly as possible so that they don't bear the brunt of potential losses. And we saw that as a huge destabilizing factor back in 2008 after some of the big drops, especially after Lehman Brothers collapsed, this big run on all of the money market funds, which took a lot of money out of the system, which put a lot of financial institutions, which depend on that money, borrowing from these money market funds in jeopardy, and really was on the brink of helping to bring down almost our entire financial system until the Treasury Department came out with a massive bailout and essentially guaranteed all of those assets. So that was a real source of instability back in 2008, and Chairman Shapiro was dead on right saying that this is something that needed to get fixed, and the SEC has the authority to fix that, but her efforts really went nowhere.
Interesting. So you ran into Shapiro several times while you were working in Washington. What did you think of the job she was doing?
You know, on a personal level, she was extraordinarily responsive to us when we had concerns, issues, or were working with the SEC as a partner.
That's at TARP, right?
What's that?
That's overseeing TARP, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes. When I was providing TARP oversight, we had a law enforcement function and worked with the SEC. And she was one of those people who would return your call within 5 minutes, which in Washington puts you in a rarefied air of people that you really tend to like and respect. So I found her to be very responsive. You know, I think overall, it's a complicated picture in assessing what she did. She had, again, I think some very significant successes just in stabilizing that agency, protecting it from near extinction, from being able to maintain and grow its budget as it got these additional responsibilities. I think she deserves a great deal of credit for that. And some of the enforcement work, particularly when you look at the insider trading cases, which were really historic cases working with the Department of Justice, those are real meaningful successes for the agency. But I think on the flip side, there are areas that are questionable. And whether fair or not, as the chair of the SEC, you know, she didn't get money market reform through the really very, very slow pace and blown deadlines on getting the Dodd-Frank rules that the SEC was responsible for getting out. And, you know, real questions about the effectiveness of some of the enforcement of the largest financial institutions and individuals that may have been responsible for a lot of the problems of the financial crisis. She never got those big cases against big name individuals, and even the cases that she got against the big institutions were done on terms that don't appear to have been a lot of deterrence. We saw a lot of settlements in which the institutions didn't have to accept responsibility for their actions, and monetary settlements that a couple of the judges actually slapped down and described as being insufficient. One judge referred to it as chump change for the big banks. Another compared it to shaking some change out of the loose cushions of their couch. So I think that the downside is this perception that her agency was not sufficiently tough on the big banks that helped create the crisis.
Yeah, I want to see if we can get some listener calls on this. Listeners, what do you think of financial reform? Do you think it's moving, or should we hold it off until we get this fiscal cliff thing solved in Washington? Call us up at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. So, Neil, I want to follow up on something that you said about financial reform and getting it done. You had mentioned that these big financial institutions can strike deals with the government without admitting liability. How can that be? What's the terminology there, and why do we allow it?
So the magic term is that in a settlement of a case, that they're allowed to settle usually involves a large fine or some degree of restitution to victims. But the terminology is that they do so with neither admitting nor denying the charges that have been brought, the core allegations of misconduct. And this is not particular to the SEC. This is really across the board with a lot of the regulatory agencies. They are permitted and do these settlements on these grounds. And from the bank's perspective, it makes a lot of sense. One of the fears of engaging in civil litigation with the government is that if they are to lose or if they're to make some sort of admissions in the accompanying settlement documents, that those admissions could be used against them by private plaintiffs in civil lawsuits to really go after them and use those admissions against them. Mm-hmm. So what they are trying to avoid is being on the hook of settling a case with the government and then having all this follow-on litigation that would potentially bury them. So you certainly understand from their perspective why they don't want to actually have to admit to the misconduct and just pay it off and to make it go away. From the government's perspective, this has been defended on several grounds. The most prevalent one is one of resources. And the idea is that because the follow-on effects of admitting this misconduct because of civil litigation, that if the SEC didn't have this ability to allow settlements without an acknowledgement of fault, that the big banks, these financial institutions, would all take the SEC to trial in every one of these cases. And the SEC says, hey, if we did that, it would so suck up our resources that we wouldn't be able to do anything else, that it would just overwhelm us as an agency. So we have to take these deals. And the second part of the justification, which I think this part is certainly true, whether it's a valid argument or not, I'll leave it for others to determine, although I think it's kind of questionable, is that they can get more money on a neither admit nor deny, that the institution be willing to pay more if they're not going to have to admit fault than perhaps otherwise. So I think those are sort of the tensions that are there. And while it may be rational for the SEC to do so, it does mean that it's not as effective as a deterrent because the ultimate payment and the consequences of that misconduct are less.
Mm-hmm. So let's go. We actually have a caller, Bob from Rego Park. He has a question. Bob, are you there? We may have lost Bob, so...
Hello.
Oh, there he is.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hi, Bob. How are you? Do you have a question for Neil?
Great. Yes. My question is, it's common sense that we need a strong banking system. It's quite obvious to me that the Obama administration and the federal government is doing this purposely because you go after the banks and they pay billions of dollars, that basically all you're doing is weakening the banks. We basically have to start from the very beginning, let the banks be banks, let the banks loan money, and just to going back in the past and trying to go after the banks again is really basically a way. Do you feel it's a waste of time? I think it is. Let's start from the beginning, strengthen our banking system.
What do you think, Neil?
Well, I think the problem with that is that, we have a system, and the reason why we have a Department of Justice and why we have an SEC is not just to collect the cash, to collect penalties just for the sake of getting penalties. These banks are so big and so powerful and have such an extraordinary record of misconduct, particularly in recent years, when you look at whether it's manipulating interest rates, as alleged in the LIBOR scandal, whether it's laundering money for countries like Iran and Cuba, as several of the big banks have been accused of doing. It's sort of one scandal after another. And if you don't start raising the pain for engaging in those types of acts, we're never going to see an end to these scandals, and we're going to continue to see real problems and people and investors and the country victimized by that behavior. So I think it's a lot more than just sort of taking money from them here and there. You know, I think it's also has to be part of establishing credible deterrence to keep them from doing this again. And while I agree with the caller that, that what we've done so far apparently has not been sufficient, and it really is just collecting some money out of the system, the purpose of an SEC and why we have these laws and rules is not just to collect money, but to create a significant amount of pain so it's no longer profitable to break the law or violate the rules, but will actually bring a level of deterrence to keep that from happening again. Mm-hmm. And if we do that, we're going to have a much safer, much more stable banking system than we do and we've had in the past few years.
So let me follow up with this then. The SEC is the biggest financial regulator in the country, and it's had a lot of trouble over the past few years. There was even a scandal not too long ago where a number of their employees were allegedly watching porn on their work computer instead of enforcing regulations in the financial markets. So what is the SEC missing right now? Where is it falling short?
Well, I would say, you know, on the porn stuff, you know, that is, as an former inspector general, that's one of those bread and butter inspector general types of investigations that you do, and it's important to do it. But the SEC is so large and has so many employees, and, you know, you sort of have that type of pool of people. Unfortunately, almost inevitably, there's going to be some that use their work computers for ways that they shouldn't, including pornography. Look, it's good to identify a problem and then to fix the problem, but I don't see that as sort of being endemic of an organization that's out of control. But look, I think that where they need to get on the ball are the areas that we've been discussing. They need to be, I think, far more aggressive in pushing for regulatory reform, of using the tools within that were provided by Dodd-Frank to effectively go out. And whether it's money market funds, whether it's pushing for a tough version of the Volcker Rule that doesn't have the unnecessary exemptions and waivers and sort of the Swiss cheese that the lobbyists are turning that rule into, I think that's part of it. And second, I think they need to – well, I think they've come a long ways from where they were back in 2008 on their enforcement side and really in some ways made remarkable progress compared to where they were. I do think that this ongoing question of being effective deterrent to the largest financial institutions because of neither admit nor deny and because of the lack of individual accountability for the actions where in most of the cases just involve the institution itself mm-hmm. – I think those are significant areas going forward that a new chairman really needs to address.
So let me ask you this really quickly. You've wondered whether any regulator can really make a difference here. They're always underpaid. They're up against these clever millionaires who try to outrun them and have a lot more resources. Is there anything that a leader of the SEC can even do realistically to turn that around? I mean, that's been the trend since the beginning.
You know, I think that you have a tremendous bully pulpit as chairman of the SEC, and it's really a question of how you use that pulpit. Now, Chairman Shapiro's approach was mostly of consensus building, and that was how she went about the job and how she believed was the best way to affect the change and reforms that she needed to. At times, sometimes it's, you know, consensus can work, and sometimes if you feel strongly about something, it might be better to use your bully pulpit and leverage other types of power in Washington, whether it's Congress, whether it's the press, or other things. Sometimes being loud and noisy has a real virtue. That's something that Andrew Cuomo, actually, now governor, told me when I first got the job down in Washington. He said being loud is a virtue in Washington, and he had spent a number of years there as the head of HUD. And I thought that was very, very good advice. And sometimes there's the temptation to go along to get along, but sometimes you have to break free of that. And if you see something that you really think is important and really matters to the country, you sort of need to knock protocols down and go public strong. And if that means putting pressure on your fellow commissioners on an issue if you think they're about to make a significant mistake, whether it's going into other parts of regulatory reform, and the chairman of the SEC sits on one of these super council of regulators that was created in Dodd-Frank to try to address systemic problems, and using that voice to make that body more proactive, more transparent. I think there are a lot of areas where individuals can make a difference. The question is getting the right individual and then backing them up with the right amount of political capital so that they can make a difference. But I think it's definitely doable. It just depends a lot on who the person is, what their personality is like, and what kind of backing they have.
So can you tell us just really quickly, what do we know about Elise Walter? Is she that person? Can she make the right enemies in Washington?
You know, I think it's very – I would hate to make any prediction on that. Her background is almost a carbon copy of Mary Shapiro as far as her background of where she had come from, dealing from FINRA, from time at the CFTC. But, you know, it's a big question when somebody comes in, what's going to happen? I mean, if you looked at the background of someone like Sheila Bair, I think before she became chair of the FDIC, you would be – you wouldn't necessarily predict that she would come and become such a strong and independent voice and such a positive, really agent for change and beating back a lot of the capture of other agencies just looking at her background. So I would definitely reserve judgment until we see what she does once she gets the job. You would expect from her resume and from her actions as an SEC commissioner that she would be somewhat similar to Chairman Shapiro, but you never know until you get there.
That's really interesting. We'll have to wait and see what she does over the next year. Neil Barofsky, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Heidi. It's been my pleasure.
Up next, we'll take your nominations for New York City's most dangerous intersection and talk with a New York Magazine reporter on what's being done to make our streets safer.